morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrat, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and Mike Cosentino sitting across from me, and we're in this. We lost it.
Good morning. We're here.
We're in the studio in Sedona.
We're going to talk about all kinds of exciting things, but one of the things we're going to talk about
is missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Yes,
it's a major nationwide campaign. I would say nationwide in the U.S., Mike, but also in Canada.
Considered a national crisis in Canada. They're First Nations people. You know, we have different titles for all these things, but they're First Nations people at the rate of disappearing, the rate of murder. And we're going to talk about why today and how those things happen. And some of the answers are obvious and some not so obvious. But we do, hopefully we'll have a couple people who are a little more expert in it. Our sister station up in Flagstaff, KNAU, has done some wonderful research on this. But we're going to be talking to a couple of folks from Montana in a little while.
Yeah. Klaus Van Stutterheim, who's a regular on the show, is calling in from Montana. He's up in Montana, and he's going to introduce our guest. Do we have her online, Tom? Not yet. Klaus, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Okay, she's back online. So go ahead.
Okay.
Could you introduce our guest? Because you're the one who really produced this show, and Mike and I are just beating up on you for
just
it.
The usual brilliance that we always are. But go ahead, Klaus. Pretend you know something.
Right. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. And we're delighted to have Brianna Lam on the phone with us. Brianna is getting a bachelor's degree at the University of Montana, and she's an enrolled member of the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation, which is all the way to the north of Montana. And she's been one of the leaders, the leader really in Montana, on missing and murdered Indigenous women, and has held multiple events throughout the year, including teach-ins, forums, and visits, visit to the U.S. Congress, very exciting, that she'll tell us about, plus everything else. Good morning, Brianna. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Brianna's a major activist in this issue, a major activist. I've been reading about her. Thanks to Klaus, who sent me a lot of material. She's a major activist and organizer, and you're based in Missoula now?
Yes, I am. I've lived in Missoula, Montana, the majority of my life, so that's where I am. I live there with my two boys.
Great. Tell us a little bit. I know that John Tester took you along to the State of the Union address. He was so impressed with the work you've been doing. You were his only guest. And did you get a chance to talk about some of the issues with other people other than Tester, who I know is kind of on your side on this?
Yes, he is. He's been a very strong ally. At the State of the Union address, there's actually a dinner beforehand. The customary meal is poultry pot pie, which was pretty delicious. And so I had the opportunity to meet with a number of senators just in passing and kind of advocate for MMIW, which is Missing Murdered Indigenous Women, and ask them to support some of the federal legislation specifically at the time, Savannah's Act, but since then there's been a couple new bills introduced which haven't passed out of committee yet, but I'm hopeful.
Tell us a little about...
Why don't you talk about the bills, the Savannah Act and the Survive Act, and what other legislation has been introduced and what the status of each is.
before you do that, and go ahead and do that, because I think that's a great thing for you to do, to tell us about. Tell us a little bit about, give us a broad picture of how serious this issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women is, and how broad spread in the United States and Canada this issue is. Tell us a little bit about the issue.
Let me just make a comment before she starts. I mean, it's once you dive into it, it's an absolutely horrendous, mind-bending issue that hasn't been talked about, and it's now being talked about for the first time, and it should have been talked about decades ago, but it's not well known, and it's absolutely awful. So with that, Brianna, go ahead, please.
Okay. Before I do all of that, I like to give a brief history of the movement itself. So where this movement could start, you could say, with First Contact. But where MMIW, the hashtag, the movement, came from was actually Canada. And it started roughly 30 years ago with a small number of women coming together to create a walk to bring awareness to one of their family members' murders in downtown Calgary. And then it kind of has spread from there. And here we are today talking about this on this radio show. And a large portion of this movement has been social media awareness. And so today we have roughly 4 to 5 key pieces of legislation at a federal level that include the Savannah's Act, the Survive Act, the Tribal Law and Order Bill, the newly established this past week, the Not Invisible Act, introduced by Senator Tester and Senator Murkowski from Alaska. And we also have the Studying the Missing and Murdered Indian Crisis Act. And collectively, what all these bills have in common is that they will establish improved data collection, more funding for crime victims funds, more funding to help families, and they will also create and hope to establish better communication lines between the BIA, between the FBI, between tribal police, between city police. Because in MMIW, that is one of the problems that we run into, is jurisdiction and the jurisdictional loopholes and gray areas and who has this case. Because when you're dealing with Native Americans and reservations, we're unique in that we have a government-to-government relationship with the United States, and we are sovereign in some ways, if you will. But when it comes to jurisdiction, when it's a major crime, the FBI steps in, and we do not have jurisdiction over that. So, and when the FBI steps in, sometimes it takes a long time because not each reservation has an FBI office. It's usually, you know, in Montana, our closest, we have one in Billings. But aside from that, you know, an FBI agent could be coming from Denver or Las Vegas. And that's a long ways away.
Brianna, this is Mike Cosentino. I'm a co-host here on Democratic Perspective. I want to say that Arizona is third among the highest number of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in the U.S.
Yes.
We did have a demonstration in Phoenix in January of 2018 over a Navajo woman named Nicole Joe, who died on Christmas Day in 2017. And so certainly the similarities, and as you know better than I do, the similarities among the states, Canada, Montana, Arizona, when it comes to Indigenous, and the problem is always, it seems, about jurisdiction. Now, there is a bill in Arizona that's, of course, they're doing what a lot of governments do. They're creating a bill to study the problem. Go ahead. But it's always, as you started to say, and I'm sure you're going to say more, it's always about jurisdiction and coordinating, you know, who's in charge here, who's going to take on this responsibility. What happens, it's whenever there's a gap in law enforcement, it seems the criminals or the people wanting to do bad things, they see that. You know, for a long time, it was gangs on the reservation, and now we're talking about, at least for a long time, the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls.
How severe is the problem, in your opinion? And I guess one thing I hear you saying is that we don't have the data to really know how bad it is, because I think that the level of discrimination and bias has meant that people didn't basically care about all these missing and murdered women, or they never put the whole picture of it together. Is that correct? Or
yes, yes, that's correct. And you're absolutely right in that there is not data on this. And that's one of the problems that we're running into in pushing legislation, is that people want these hard facts and these numbers, and they want to see it. But that doesn't exist. But there is a majority of other activists out there who are collecting data ourselves, because, like you said, there are these discrepancies, and there's these discrepancies in reporting this data to databases. So, for example, I have some of the numbers in from Arizona as of January 2019, and from a grassroots effort, we have collected 160 Arizona cases, and this is only in cases in a 20-year span. It's not a large 100-year span or a 70-year span, and that's a lot of cases, 160, and there are more. This number isn't going down, unfortunately. This number will go up, and in that, you have 108 missing cases and 51 murder cases, and in those missing cases, I guarantee you that they're probably not active, or somebody's not actively looking for these girls. They are, families are looking for them. Communities are looking for them. It's not agencies. It's not the FBI.
Well, that's it. I've heard people say that, and I don't know where this came from, that they disappear three times. They disappear once in life, and then mm-hmm. they disappear in the media, because, you know, the media doesn't report these terrible crimes. And then they disappear in the data, which is what we're talking about now.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I'm just agreeing with
yeah,
you. You're
yeah,
exactly right.
And it seems so wrong.
Said.
Well, I've seen some. Oh, go ahead, Brianna. Sorry.
Oh no. Go ahead. I was just going to elaborate more on that. And then, so when we don't have these hard data facts, that's where it stops in legislation. If you can't show me this is a problem, then why should I help you? Why do we need this? So it's kind of that catch 22 there. What we need, you know, like, what are we going to do? It's kind of that standoff.
So there's
right
this
now.
Terrible issue, Brianna, and what you have to do is kind of cold-bloodedly collect the facts. Otherwise, you can't convince people in the Senate or the House or anywhere else to take the kind of strong emergency action that's needed.
Yes. Another thing, you're exactly right. And another thing that we run into are stereotypes. For example, here in Montana, with one of our more well-known MMIW bills, it's called Hannah's Act. It's running into the problem right now where some of our state legislators don't understand why they need to help. What Hannah's Act will do, before I start this, will create a position within our state, which is similar to Arizona's bill, to collect this data for our state. And there's a fiscal note in there. And with that fiscal note, they don't understand why they need to provide this funding when Native American communities are already flush with cash, which, I'm sorry, we are not. And so we're running into that stereotype as well. And so it's kind of been hard to, when your state legislators don't take the time to learn about all of their constituents, it gets frustrating.
Just for our audience, we want to tie that. We're talking human trafficking. In some cases, we're talking domestic violence. We're talking even sex trade. Mm-hmm. And these are all contributing factors in the missing and murdered indigenous women and girls. And in Arizona, there is a lawmaker, her name is Jennifer Germain, I believe. She's a Democrat from Tempe, who's introduced the bill, at least, to study the problem. But just to kind of put it in the, it's easy to, anyway, it's such a huge problem that we got four of us here on the microphone this morning trying to get some grips. One who's an activist, and Brianna Lamb, who is much more familiar, but the idea is to try to convey just what a serious problem it is.
There are some statistics that I've seen, although, you know, they're not precise. They don't go down to individual cases. But according to the U.S. Department of Justice, American Indian women face murder rates that are more than 10 times the national average. And homicide is the third leading cause of death among 10 to 24 years of age. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, this is a world that is hard for us to even comprehend to live under those conditions. One of the things that I've always wondered about and I've never heard a good explanation for, Brianna, is, besides the fact that these cases are not effectively not prosecuted, why do these horrible things happen to Native American women that, you know, don't happen in the rest of the country? Why are they such a target? And who are the perpetrators?
I think, in my opinion, it's a number of things. Effectively, Native American communities have, I like to phrase it, because I'm a domestic abuse survivor, and I ultimately could have been one of these missing cases, and that's kind of how I fell into this line of work. And how I describe our relationship with the United States being Native American communities is an abusive relationship. And right now, with this all this activism, we're starting to come out of that and we're starting to heal. So one of the root causes would be that trauma that we've experienced as a whole. Another cause is those jurisdictional loopholes where Native American communities, we cannot prosecute non-Native members, say, murder on a reservation. The FBI has to come in and do that. And when they're taking 6 months to come and collect evidence, you know, that's gone. And they're long gone.
Well, that's what happens. You lose that key. Cases go cold fast. You know, I mean, whether we're talking TV cop shows here or not, the reality is that cases go cold fast. And because of the reservations in Montana and Arizona are so far flung, and the government organizations responsible in the more serious crimes are just not responsive.
Well, the other thing is that the FBI, if you've got FBI agents coming from Denver to a reservation in Montana, they're not going to know the lay of the land. They're not going to know the people there. They're not going to have information. They're not going to have informants about what happened. They're not going to have anything. They're going to arrive, you know, with trying their best maybe, but without any kind of grounding in the places where these things occur.
The cool thing, though, I have to admit, I want to get a plug in for Arizona. We bash Arizona a lot, but the bill to study the problem in Arizona, who is, as I said, number third in this problem in missing and murdered women, passed unanimously in the House. So they did. There's not much that happens in the Arizona legislature that happens unanimously. But this bill did pass through the House unanimously, and it's still being considered by the Senate.
Explain a little bit about the reservation. Of course, we have the Navajo and Hopi here and so forth and so on. Because, you know, if you're speeding on the Navajo reservation, one of the Navajo cops comes in and the light goes around and they stop you. But what's the jurisdiction of the Navajo, any reservation police? What's their jurisdiction versus the national jurisdiction of the FBI? And also, how does the states that you're in play into this? I know that's a complicated issue, but.
Yeah, see, there we go. So if you had a speeding ticket on a reservation, you would go to tribal court for that. And that's something that a tribal court can collect on from anybody. And I'm probably going to be wrong in all this, but we're going to try and tackle this because it is complicated. So then when the state comes into it, the state does not have jurisdiction on the reservation unless there's a couple reservations. For example, we have the Flathead Reservation here in Montana, and they are a public law 280 tribe, which means they have a compact with the state, and the state does have jurisdiction on the reservation. But within their reservation, they have a couple, you know, bigger towns, namely Polson. But so within Polson, you have city police. But then you have also, obviously, we have highways. So on that reservation, Highway Patrol also has jurisdiction. And then when you go into major crimes, then the FBI will have jurisdiction. So essentially, you have all of these agencies who have jurisdiction over this one piece of land in different parts of this piece of land. So that gets confusing there. But if you're not a public law 280 tribe, you have tribal jurisdiction, and then you would have federal jurisdiction.
So, Brianna, I mean, besides all of these acts that will, quote, study the problem, just from your perspective, what could be or ought to be the ultimate solution? I mean, studying a problem is fine and, you know, makes everybody feel good, but it's obviously not a solution. What do you think would be an effective solution?
An effective solution, it's hard to see long-term in working with this because I've been working in it for so long that I take things small, because everybody wants that final solution. They want it perfect. They want it solved. But in working with this, just small steps. So I think right now, personally for me, I want to see this a lot of legislation passed. And I use this model when I do presentations. It's a puzzle. And on that puzzle, each piece is a different job, or if you will, a different part of the puzzle. Say, you know, we have this activism over here. We have these legislators. You know, we have, indigenous communities healing themselves through, building healthy relationships and all of that. And what I want is that puzzle to be whole and complete. And I think ultimately that will solve a lot of our problems. If everybody can work together and that puzzle is whole and complete.
And right now there's this disjunction between all these different jurisdictions. And you can imagine if you've got three or four agencies, if they're not really at the top of their game, then information is going to get lost. And
yes.
Cases are going to get lost. I guess there needs to be some sort of public relation focus on this issue to make sure that all these agencies are coordinating their efforts and that the job's getting done.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of this legislation will tackle, is improving all of that communication. But in that, why do we need legislation to tell an agency that they need to make these girls a priority, you know? I kind of was going over this in my head a couple weeks ago that it's interesting that Native women were worth more when the government was paying for scalp.
Jeez, okay. Well, there you go. A couple of women, there was another story on KNAU that talked about, it seems like a simple question, they said, how many Native American women have gone missing. And so a couple of researchers, a lady named Abigail Echohawk and Anita Lucchesi, they went to 71 cities and tried to find that out. And what they found was 506 cases, but so many of them weren't covered in the media at all. They just fall through the cracks. So there was no information. And as we've been talking about for the whole show, that the data isn't shared, the data doesn't exist, so these women get lost in the data.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you a sort of personal question. I'm from northeastern Oklahoma. It's Osage and Cherokee territory. Lots and lots of indigenous folks there grew up mm-hmm. with them. But there are no reservations. where there are no reservations, is the situation as bad or worse or better? Like in Oklahoma, we don't have reservations.
I think that the problem, I don't really know Oklahoma's numbers, so I don't know that I could answer this, but I would probably say that just in my experience, that the problem just is bad there. I know a couple months ago there was a murder in Oklahoma of a young Native woman who was a mother of four by a random stranger. And that kind of got highly publicized in the media. And so I think that the problem there is, I imagine if I looked up the numbers, it'd be relatively the same as on a reservation or off the reservation. Because ultimately, in Montana with both, or in Arizona with both, where we have the high number of urban natives and the reservation, it's a problem everywhere.
Right. It is starting to be studied, though, and that's what we're talking about this morning, getting that data together. Who's going to be responsible? Some people might scoff at it, but creating a bill just to study the problem is a good first step to find out.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that is a great first step. And in federal legislation, we have that Studying the Missing and Murdered Indian Crisis Act to go along with our other bills that will establish committees, task forces, a number of groups, and also to go along with improving the communication between all agencies. So I think with all of this legislation being pushed and all of it paralleling each other, I think we have a really great first step.
I know in Canada they're very worried about young Indigenous women hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. And we see that all over, young women hitchhiking by themselves. And that makes them, I would expect, really vulnerable. I know that that's a Canadian issue, but is that true down here in the States too?
I believe you're referring to maybe the Highway of Tears up there, which is that section of highway between the reservation and one of their major cities where women hitchhike a lot. And they do have a number of missing and murdered cases along there. But I think down here in the United States, we don't necessarily have that hitchhiking problem. Maybe in a few of our states that have that wide gap like they do up there, but I don't really see that as being a problem hitchhiking.
Well, yeah, looking at the statistics that I'm looking in front of me now, once again from the KNAU study, that in Canada is interesting that 4% of their female population are Indigenous women, and it's not nearly that high in the USA, but 4% of the females in Canada are Indigenous women of various tribes, but they comprise 25% of the homicide victims. At least this study is a few years old. And so just getting that kind of data together is new and helpful. And these two researchers, Echo Hawk and Lucchese, are just finding more and more information and discovering more and more missing women. And at each step, you can hear in all of our voices this outrage or the surprise or the shock that this has gone unstudied unresolved for so long.
Yes.
The issue begins being brought forward 30 years ago, right? And has been moving along for 30 years, and here we are, and people still don't know about it.
Well, we're trying to help fix that, right? I mean, this radio show is a small part in the overall efforts that Brianna and people like Brianna are making to get the story out. I mean, the story is certainly out much more than it was even, I think, 5 years ago.
Brianna, let me ask you this. So we just got a message from a listener, He says that Native Americans in the USA are, it's an interesting perspective, are the only people in the entire country who are living under sanctioned segregation. He said everybody seems to accept it, but he, and he, I guess, I mean, in his questionnaire, he's wondering, how does this contribute to the problem? Does the whole reservation system contribute to the problem?
Yeah, I like to go back to what I said before with that abusive relationship with the United States, you know, that our forced segregation, if you will, and our forced assimilation ultimately leads to all this unhealthiness in Native communities, that we get stereotyped as alcoholics, as drug addicts, as being poor, as, you know, we live in third world conditions on reservations, and it's because it comes from that trauma of that taking away of somebody's identity, the taking away of somebody's culture, the taking away of who a person is, and telling them you can't live that way anymore. It's bad for you. And when you get told that enough, that emotional abuse, that physical abuse, you start to believe it. So that's where we are. That's where we've been. We've been brought down. And like I said, we're starting to, with our youth, they are starting to emerge as these beautiful leaders and, really go in, you know, they're holding up education. They're holding up sobriety. They're holding up wellness. They're holding up healthy relationships. So I'm really hopeful for reservations, our Native communities as a whole, to where all of these problems that you see from that forced segregation, we will start to heal. And from that, I think that we can really, because I mean, in the United States, we have roughly 7,000 some odd state legislators. And among those, there's only about 83 Native Americans. So I'm hoping in the future that number will grow.
Yeah, and I don't want to bring up bad memories, but you went through some difficult times, domestic violence-wise, and you, what would it, how easy would it have been for you to have disappeared?
I think that it would have been relatively easy, and when a woman leaves an abusive relationship, that is the most dangerous time. That is when women and children are killed the most.
Right.
And when I left, it doesn't end there. There was a lot of stalking and harassment to myself, my friends, and my family. And it got so to where I would have to check in with my friends. They'd be worried for me. Don't go anywhere by yourself. Tell us where you'll be at. Please check in with us. And so, you know, that definitely could have been a possibility. And even in my relationship, I definitely could have been one of those statistics, because I have had, you know, those nightly visits to the ER. I've had guns pulled on me, and it's a very real reality for myself and a lot of other Native women out there.
So what seemed, what I hear you saying is that with the support of friends and family, it made it a lot harder for anybody who wanted to, your stalker or your ex, to do the deed. If it wasn't for that support, those women and girls that don't have that support might not, or certainly may not be as lucky.
We have women shelters here in the Verde Valley that protect women who are endangered and kids. Is there any agency doing that or groups doing that on the different reservations?
On reservations, there are domestic violence services and help, but it's very hard to help a lot of people with the funding that they have, I guess you can say. All of their fundings are stretched very thin. So it makes it hard. And for example, here in Montana, on Fort Belknap, where I'm from, you know, we don't have SARC, which is the sexual assault resources, you know. So if a woman were to be raped, she would have to travel 2.5 hours to get a rape kit. And from there, she wouldn't have any resources to go home, to get back home 2.5 hours. So you go through all of this process, and then you're just stuck there because there aren't resources to help them. So there are resources, but they're very limited.
Well, you know, that takes us back to our question. What about reservation law enforcement? What about reservation help? There are, you know, there's a perception out there, as you already alluded to, that reservations are flush with money. We know they're not. What are the tribes doing to use their own resources, I guess, to solve this problem? We know we know legislatures, I'm getting to a point here in a minute, we know legislatures think they have money to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. The reality is they don't, or they're not. What's the story, Brianna?
Well, to solve this problem on our reservations, I lost my train of thought.
That's fine.
We are having those healthy relationships, you know, those healing, I don't want to say conferences, but we're learning about healthy relationships, and we're learning about abusive relationships, and we're learning about those warning signs. We also have a number of community advocates who have taken an interest in teaching young women and girls, I shouldn't say young women and girls, it's across the board. I mean, my 63-year-old aunt attended a self-defense class. We're teaching self-defense. We're teaching warning signs. We're teaching, you know, be safe in public. As far as our police officers go, they're becoming more aware of situations. You know, we're learning, you know, those human trafficking signs across the board, for, say, the hospitality industry. They are learning, you know, human trafficking signs because hotels are used a lot for human trafficking.
So just
to have, yeah, go ahead.
Improving life on the reservation in general, teaching these skills about healthy living and healthy life, that alone would decrease the crimes of murder and death, at least somewhat. The bad actors wouldn't find their victims as vulnerable if life in general improved on the reservation, which I think is what our caller, or at least our listener wanted to find out about, that this system, what he called a sanctioned segregation system, if reservations somehow were able to retain sovereignty and be more a part of the, let's call it, dominant culture for now, then maybe some of these problems would go away.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing. Sorry. Yeah, you can go ahead.
I was talking to a Navajo legislator, and she said that she saw the Navajo reservation, which is quite large, of course, as having its main relationship with the federal government, and the state government being secondary or not as important. How does this mix work nationwide? I know that by calling in the FBI, you're bringing in the federal government, not the state government, to investigate murders, right, on a reservation. How well are the reservations relating to the state government, which are awfully, some of them pretty, us liberals would call them reactionary, they got their heads in the sand. But how does that work out? I mean, what's the relationship? Do you have a good relationship from the reservations with the Montana state government as well as the federal government, or is it all a mess?
I think in Montana that we're very fortunate that we have a large number of Native legislators. In fact, we have in the double digits this year with 14 or 15, which is really historic for our state. And I think that our tribal-to-state relationship has been improving, except for the fact of the few legislators who think we are flush with money and they still believe all of these other stereotypes. And we are very fortunate in our state to have really great senators, to have that really great federal relationship with our federal government. So I think Montana is moving in a great direction as far as having relationships with our state and our federal government. And I'm seeing that in a lot of other states as well. So I think, you know, I hope that Arizona could establish that state-to-tribe relationship.
Klaus, do you have a question for our guest? We're beginning to run out of time.
Yeah, the thought that went through my head wouldn't be the ultimate solution to the problem. Be rather than, you know, this confusion of jurisdiction and so forth, at some point an establishment of a really local authority that would have the power to go after those crimes immediately as they're committed, not somebody coming in from the outside who doesn't know it, but somebody who is actually there on the ground, you know, maybe the tribal police, to pursue those crimes immediately as they happen and are familiar with the territory. Wouldn't that be the ultimate solution?
That would be a great solution, but in order to do that, we would have to overturn the Major Crimes Act, and I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Well, listen, folks, don't go away, either of you, because if we do have some time, we want to talk, but we want to make sure we get some of these things in that we have to, you know, we just kind of roll ahead and talk about the main subject of the show. But we do want to mention Democrats of the Red Rocks as one of our benefactors in keeping Democratic perspective on the air. It is certainly a registered club whose job it is, whose mission it is to elect Democrats. It's that simple. I'm going to work backward here. May 16th, and right here in Sedona, we are going to have Mark Kelly, the Senate candidate for Arizona, here in Sedona, May 16th. He'll be at Old Sedona Bar and Grill at 8 o'clock in the morning, talking at the Door breakfast meeting, Democrats of the Red Rocks breakfast meeting on May 16th at 8 a.m. at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill. If you want to hear Mark Kelly, candidate for Senate, it's kind of a big deal.
We hope to have him on the show, Mike, too. We have an invitation to him. We have not heard back whether he has time to do it.
We are in negotiations to have Mark Kelly on Democratic Perspective here. Hopefully we will.
2 minutes, Mike.
Thursday.
Mike, weren't we going to looking for a larger venue for Kelly because we're afraid that we'd overrun the Old Sedona?
Well, that's I think the Doors dealing with that.
We've been talking to Brianna Lamb, who has moved from being abused and being a victim to being someone who has personally done a great deal to help other victims. And I really want to salute her. This is the best kind of a person, American, who begins to help other people, people you don't even know, right, Brianna? We really respect that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes, you see a problem and go after it, and that's what it's all about. Thank you. I'm once again doing my radio thing. I want to move on here that on April 18th at 8 a.m., April 18th, we have a discussion of the future of river and groundwater in northern Arizona. It was rescheduled from February when we were snowed out, believe it or not. So the Door breakfast on April 18th at 8 a.m. at the Old Sedona Family Restaurant will be the future of water in northern Arizona. We have a couple of great speakers coming, so please try to support that. Once again, the story we did today, or the subject we tried to talk about today with Brianna Lamb and Klaus Van Stenberg has been, topical and timely. And there's lots more to say about it, but in some ways, until the law enforcement takes this seriously and the media takes this seriously, we want to acknowledge it. Please don't forget, you can listen to this and all of our shows on VBID.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.